Hello everyone, welcome to edition 192 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK and in the Norfolk, UK fresh air. We're also on Future Radio in Norwich, hello there, and brought to you by our proud partners Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up for the game for free by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist Michael Bailey and we are here at the Buck Inn in Norwich, not too far away from the Rush Cutters. We are moonlighting or cheating? What are we doing, Ped?
We are spreading our wings and testing all available resources.
That's fine by me. To round up the big restart and the 2017 Belgian Grand Prix, should Force India be renamed Force Into the, as in Force Into the Wall? Are Ferrari really quicker than Mercedes? And we are officially vindicated on Danny Ric. In more ways than one. Joining us on the pod this week, we have, you just heard him, fellow NRF1 podcast founder Perry Hamilton, motoring journalist David Tillier, and self-confessed Team Lewis fangirl, Melissa Rowlands. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us. What a great evening it is to be alive. How are we, Ped?
Banging, yeah, really good.
Banging, have you got a better word than banging, DT?
No, I was just about to say, I'm going to try not to fall asleep at some point throughout the podcast.
We're not that bad.
Well, no, I've been awake for like 28 hours now, so...
Doing...
Work.
Do you want to say what your work is?
So I work for the ambulance service. I finished work at 10 o'clock this morning. It's now, what, gone 8 o'clock in the evening. I started work at 8 o'clock the previous evening. Probably was awake from about 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. So, yeah, tired. But, obviously...
You look a mess, mate. I mean, to be honest, like you look rough.
But he's a hero. So
oh, God,
it doesn't
yeah.
matter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I turned up, so... Yeah.
A rough hero, there we go. Yeah, well done, DT, well done. Melissa's here. How are you, Melissa?
I'm good, thank you.
Did you enjoy the race? I'm going to get straight into that.
Yeah, it's all right. Solid 7.
Look at that. I love that. Straight in.
Right, wrap it up, man. Listening, everyone.
Solid 7. Is that out of 10 or 11? Anyway, on we go. Belgium. The return of hostilities after the summer. But was it really hostile? Did we see hostile racing, Melissa?
Yeah. Force India. Enough said.
It was a superb weekend for Lewis, which is where we're going to start, I think. 200th Grand Prix that he was taking part in. His 68th pole, which equaled Michael Schumacher's record. His 58th career win. Third at Spa. And you could just tell, I thought, on his face on the podium, just how focused he was about it. How focused he was about all this, Ben.
I think you could tell the moment he got out of the car after he parked it up in that number one winner's slot. He was, you're right, and in the green room when he was getting his water and everything like that, he was just so dialed in to what was going on this weekend. I mean, it was just got the Norwich Hells Angels Club just cruising past for some reason.
They need bigger bikes.
They do. But yeah, I mean, he, as you say, dialed in, focused. He was really, really into it. And I think he worked for this win as well. I mean, it didn't come so easily for him. Safety car did help. But he worked very well. That restart was very well done. And especially managing to maintain speed behind a very slow moving safety car.
Oh, that's interesting. You think the safety car helped? Because it did kind of bunch everything up.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure whether or not helped is probably the best word, because that was the closest that Vettel got to taking the lead after the restart. Hamilton handled it really well, but Vettel almost had the jump on him. And if it was a lesser driver, I think, not to diss Bottas, but I think if Bottas was in that position, I think Vettel would have got past him. Because I think.
But it didn't. You keep those clean ultras for the undercut and nothing else, and you can't undercut if you're behind a safety car. There's no point in getting on a fresh pair of boots to then sit behind a safety car and maybe try and get him on the restart. Because catching's one thing, getting past is another. You won't have DRS for 2 laps. You're not going to outbreak Lewis going into a corner if he's on boots that are just as fresh. So, I mean, okay, then they're not ultras. But still, the grip is there, especially the mechanical grip, for a Merc. So if you're going to use those tyres, you have to have it as an undercut. You have to be able to give it the beans for 2 whole laps on box fresh tyres. You can't do that behind a safety car, so I do think it helped.
What there was a brilliant piece of driving from Lewis in saying that he tried to kind of back Seb up on the restart so he wouldn't get a proper slingshot past him, which I think even Alan McNish was like, that's proper thinking on your feet and really knowing what you're doing. And Lewis has shown he can do that numerous times before.
Yeah, I think the best word to describe Lewis's race is managed. He was very, very fast throughout, but he managed his race very, very efficiently. He worked, I think he worked very, very hard to keep himself ahead of Vettel throughout the Grand Prix. And I think he's maybe even right in saying that probably Vettel had the race pace over him. And it was just Hamilton in that star quality to be able to bring that extra 10% to his yeah.
Say that again, Melissa.
We love him.
Well, you love him. We're all very terribly objective, obviously. But I mean, it's interesting because Lewis did say the Ferraris were quicker, and initially I thought he was saying that in terms of the weekend. But I wonder if he's maybe a little bit more conscious of this second half of the season and what's coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought whoever was going to win this, it kind of sets a precedent for the rest of the season. I thought whoever's going to win this is probably going to go on to win the lot. But the good thing about Lewis Hamilton is, he, like the guy said, he manages his race so well, manages his fuel well, his tyres well. He knows when to stick on hammer time. He knows how far to keep a distance. He knows the track so well. He's always got everything kind of like planned and sussed out. He dictated the pace behind the safety car and kind of knew what he wanted to do. Apparently, he said he didn't get the start off that he wanted and it wasn't as good as what he thought it was going to be. But that's like when Vettel got quite close and nearly did kind of overtake him. He kind of knew what to do. He's always got a plan. And like you said, he managed his race well. He always does. He's a bit of a pro, isn't he?
Well, I was watching with a friend of mine watching the race, and when they did that head-on shot and Vettel was alongside Lewis and they were going down the straight, and I said, he's got him, he's ahead of him, he's got him. And my friend said, no, he hasn't. And he wasn't watching the race, he was watching the telemetry. And on the telemetry, the Ferrari maxed at about 315 kilometres per hour. And the Merc got up to like 320. And he said, you can just tell just by looking at the top speed that there's no chance. Hamilton is faster than him in a straight line, regardless of the the boots or whatever, regardless of the tyres. It was really, really interesting because shout out to Adam Noon. But he,
come on the podcast, Adam.
Come on, Adam.
Yeah.
Adam Moon.
Noon.
Noon.
As in midday. But yeah. So I thought that was really.
No, that's staying in, Melissa.
I thought that was a really interesting observation from Adam. I thought he did really well there.
We're calling him Adam Moon until he comes on the podcast. By the way, that's your own fault, Adam. Come
that
on the podcast. Yeah, he will like that. There's a shout out for Adam there. We'll get on to dissecting Ferrari in a little moment, but first, I saw this as why Valtteri Bottas is not in the running and hasn't been in the running for the driver's title. He is far too inconsistent. If he's on it, he's fine, but there's too many weekends when he's just not on it, and in his own words, he's not really sure why.
Never thought he was going to be in it. No, he's new, he's got to learn the way the team functions, how that works.
Is it just because he's new?
Yeah, you'd think it wouldn't be, wouldn't you?
I mean, he's got a good amount of experience in Formula One now. He's done a few seasons now, you know. And yeah, I think he's done a fair few races now, so he's not a rookie by any stretch of the imagination. But like you say, he's really inconsistent. Yeah. He seems to struggle on tyres that other people relish, but then seems to relish tyres that other people will not particularly enjoy.
Which absolutely surprises me, because there was talk on the Sky coverage during the lead up to quali that, because they're going to talk about, you know, actually we're going to operate as a team more, we're not going to let the drivers go one-on-one, we're going to do what's best for the team, which would have been great a race ago. and I think yes. I said it at the time, it was an absolutely ridiculous thing for them to do. But they're going to go, right, Hamilton is the guy that we want to win the championship and Bottas is his backup. And then someone said maybe they're going to split strategy for Bottas and get Bottas to do his quickest time in Q2 on a set of softs, or you know, not the option on the main, you know, sort of harder tyre. And they didn't do that. And I just thought, I don't know. I mean, the idea is that if you're on a different strategy, it's not to be competitive from the start. Yeah. It's to come into play two-thirds in, maybe be traffic where a front runner would be looking to come back out, maybe just mess something up. You're a spanner in the works. You're not supposed to be challenging for that front spot. Now, whether that's, okay, we need to put all eggs in Lewis's basket because he's got the lead in points, or whether that's, actually, we recognise what Bottas is and he's not a consistent race winner, so that's how we should. But if you're going to do that, I mean, might as well start doing it. Okay, you can't second guess them because it worked. They won at the weekend, you know, and they did very well. But he should never have lost out to Ricciardo, and he should never have.
I couldn't even saw where Valtteri. I can't even see where he lost it. I don't. It's like all of a sudden he was in fifth. I was like, I don't. I can't even see where he just dropped away.
Again, it's quite similar to what happened in Hungary. He just couldn't keep up with the pace. Yeah. And
but then look at the two people that took those positions off him: Daniel Ricciardo and Kimi Raikkonen, stone cold killers. They are absolute racers, and they will go for the gap.
Arguably, you'd say Danny Rick is more like Ricky going into Red Bull from, you know, and saying, right, okay, this is all new. And he fared pretty well. He fared better than what Valtteri, unfortunately, is faring at the moment. I don't know. He'll get there, but I just didn't ever think this season was going to be.
I think that comparison is interesting because obviously when Ricciardo came into Red Bull, he was against Vettel. Vettel was the established team leader, and he showed him a clean pair of heels.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not
to lose, I suppose, in a way. But not then Vettel's.
Not Vettel's best season, admittedly, but you know, he showed himself. But Valtteri hasn't asserted himself.
No.
But then, how, you know, there's not that many people that can assert themselves against Hamilton.
No, that's very true, and that's a fair point to remember. Let's look at his competition. But
Jensen did it though.
Nico did it after we said he never would.
Ended up going, I don't give a f-, didn't he? Pretty much. He's just like, no f***. Given, I'm just
have to
gonna
with pleasure.
He kind of all of a sudden was just like, no, I'm just gonna have to because I've got nothing to lose. Is Valtteri too polite?
But I don't see. Now you're looking at whether or not Ricciardo and Vettel's a fair comparison. Ricciardo's an academy driver. He's come up, he knows he's got a future if he just performs, and they've usually got a bit of a leash with him as long as he's not an idiot, which you're looking at Daniel Kvyat. But if you're not an idiot and you're competent, you've got a future in that team because they've invested in you. Mm. Merck haven't invested anything in Bottas. They've given him a one-year contract. Yeah, 1 year contract. That's pressure. That's the sword of Damocles over your head. And maybe you're just outthinking yourself. Forget all that. Go out there and race. I still don't think he's going to win as many races as you know, other people around him, but he'll do better.
Do you think Sergio Perez went to McLaren too early?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Why?
Because he wasn't ready for a winning culture. He didn't understand what a winning culture meant. He didn't understand the responsibility that came with a winning culture. And therefore, he tried to overreach himself and he became a problem. That's personally why I think he went there too early.
Okay.
Just maybe to add to the pressure, George Russell, Norfolk's own, won again in GP3. So he is moving on very nicely. And I remember now, I had a tip-off that I can't remember, but there's some engineering, top engineering talent under Lewis's car that is currently living in Norfolk. So I'm working on that to find out who it is. That's another Norfolk claim to the world of Formula One success. Anyway, if you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the NRF1 podcast, why would you? Then get subscribed through your podcast player of choice. Just visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you'll find the link for you, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, all those jobbies. And if you can't find it, email us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Right, let's fire up the NRF1 pit stops.
I can't even remember what I did. It was such a long time ago.
But it's still the best bit self-impression we've got. Yeah. I mean, they do it quicker now, obviously. That me. So there we go. Right.
Do they? Because we had some slow stops this weekend.
Well, Lewis's one was bang on, by the way. That was a work of art. 2.3
celebrity
seconds.
Celebrity pit stops this time as well.
Well, we're going to get to that, DT. Yeah. We're going to get to that. But let's start off with Ferrari, shall we? They've been very busy since we last recorded a podcast. Kimi signed up for next year, I believe. Vettel signed a new 3-year deal, although that really means he'll actually race for 3 years for Ferrari. We shall see. Any initial thoughts on either of those things?
I think the most interesting thing for me on Seb's deal is apparently that he has written in a clause that either gives him veto over his teammate or says that Lewis can't be his teammate at Ferrari.
Wow.
I think there's definitely something in there that basically says you can't do that. And absolutely. And again, shout out to Adam Moon. I'm sorry, Adam, I got dragged into that. But Adam made a fair point and he said, and that's exactly the difference between, well, that's exactly what you don't want to see from Seb, and that's why I can't get on board with him. Because what you want is you want someone going, bring me whoever you want, I'll beat him.
Matter.
That's I think that might be a Lewis approach to just be like, put who you want in that car. Yeah. I'll smash him into next week.
That is, of course, what we'd all want, but you've got to be realistic as well. If you are going to have more success if you have a team built around you. Why have the distraction of a really good teammate? They'll be good enough in another car.
But in another car, you can't control them. Whereas if you win three races and they've maybe come fourth or third just from a run of bad luck, suddenly that team's going to throw all their eggs in that basket.
There's no way Lewis Hamilton will openly welcome any next teammate. Why do you think he's being so nice to Valtteri Bottas at the moment? But anyway, that's another point. We're not going to get stuck into that. What we are going to get stuck into is, sort of, again, we talked about the pace of Ferrari, certainly race pace. I mean, it's quite stalkerish from Seb, wasn't he? He was on Lewis's tail, but couldn't quite turn it into leading the race. Is that much of an issue? Is that just a kind of a waiting game? Because there clearly is not a lot between these two cars, which is brilliant, by the way.
Yeah, I think... But I don't know whether stalkerish is, yeah, maybe it might be the right word actually, thinking about it.
Thank you.
I didn't agree initially, but I mulled it over for a few seconds.
I'm used to the criticism.
His race was based on letting Lewis, or hoping that Lewis would make a mistake. That was his whole, and he admitted as much after the race. You know, he didn't really have much of a go at him throughout the race, apart from just after the restart, and that was one go, and then Lewis was off again. So Lewis controlled and commanded the race, and Vettel just had to sit there and pray that Lewis made a mistake. And Lewis is too much in the zone at the moment, I think, to cock up.
I'm sure his time will come. Does anyone, I mean, I was probably going to mention this later on as well, but does anyone want to mention Kimi's penalty for not breaking under the yellows or double yellows?
Down by 8 miles an hour. That's what it was, wasn't it? Wasn't it 190, had to go down to 198, but 82 or something. But apparently, he didn't show any intention of lifting off.
Oh, you can hear that on the audio. You could hear that. We listened back to it. Oh, okay. They showed the replay from in the cockpit camera, and he just goes past the yellow flag, and it's... He's on the rev limiter. He's on the limiter the whole way through.
He's on a straight. What do you want him to do?
But
the car wasn't in his way.
But he didn't know that. That's not a clear straight. He's very low to the ground. There's a lot of elevation change at Spa. You don't know what that flag's signalling. That flag, you could see the car on the side and go, that's probably my hazard. But actually, 3 feet up the road could have been another car that clattered into it. He doesn't know what's in there. Unless someone's on the radio going, like a rally driver, co-pilot, going 200 feet, max on the right, da-da-da, up ahead, you've got someone else there. And he's not having that information. He hates the radio. You know he hates the radio. He's as bad as Alonso with the radio.
Would you agree that maybe the penalty was a bit harsh, given how unharsh some of the penalties have been throughout the season for things that are quite considerably worse? But that's not a criticism on Kimi. It's more of a criticism on the sport. There's a serious lack of consistency in the penalty.
I wholeheartedly agree with that point, DT. With the move towards... I mean, Brundle caught up with one of the race stewards on the grid before the race, and he said, is the idea today to, you know, let the guys race? And, you know, is that a theme that we're seeing throughout the whole season, to just try and improve and keep the racing flowing and try and do minimal? And he said, yeah, that's the idea. That's what we're there for. You know, we want to keep it flowing and keep it safe and what have you. And I just think every now and then, when you let things get too lax and people start taking the piss, you kind of have to come down heavy-handed every now and then. And it's usually you come down heavy-handed on a big name, see Deflate Gate with Tom Brady in the NFL, or the Bounty Gate with the Saints.
Which we will come on to, because I think there's but we'll come on to another team who maybe got a little bit stuck in terms of penalties. Slam dunk, really, from Kimi. Really just ridiculous. And it's really cost him in terms of the race as well. Red Bull. Now, Daniel Ricciardo... an interesting conversation on the Checker Flag podcast about how, well, you know, he's kind of been lucky to get the opportunities of getting on the podiums he's had this season. Now, I'm going to have to check this back, and listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've ever said it was lucky. He was just there to make the most of his situations. He was there. He was always in the right place to pick up a podium if he could, which I think is fantastic. So I don't think it's lucky, because that would just assume that he just got it. But it's consistent and it's reliable. And that way he's showing his real maturity there. And another podium where he did so well, really, to keep ahead of Kimi himself, I thought, DT.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It's not luck at all. He hasn't got the car to challenge for a podium naturally. So he has to use his raw ability, his guile, you know, and he's basically just takes advantage of, yeah, of the situations that are thrown his way. And he's shown time and time again that is one of his real key strengths, is that he will maximise whatever potential he has in front of him. And that's why he's had so many podiums that you think actually probably on pure performance the car's not capable of doing. And he's just maximised that. And you can't take that away from the man. I think that, that if anything, that, that speaks volumes about him.
We're kind of in a very different situation with Max, aren't we? I mean, Max, what we have to say is that Max Verstappen actually qualified half a second quicker than Danny, which is interesting in itself. And obviously that was off the back of all the issues they had in Hungary, where they did a silly video on the track, you know, dancing to some sort of dance music, and Channel 4 took this as, look, everything's rosy. And Mark Webber brilliantly said, nah, me and Seb, you know, ran into each other and they made us do one of these stupid videos and we just had to do it because they told us to do it. You know, didn't want to do it, neither of us wanted to do it, we just did it. It's all smoke and mirrors, which I loved. I'm not saying that was the case between Max and Danny Ric, but his fifth DNF, Max Verstappen, this season, and there was a lot of head shaking. I mean, from the moment it happened, he was shaking his head. And I think he was still shaking his head when he ended up doing these interviews afterwards.
Yeah, 50% DNF, isn't it, this season?
I think that was actually his sixth, wasn't it?
I think it's like 50%.
Six out of 12 races.
Sorry, apologies. Yeah. 6 out of 12. Still, that's even worse.
He's done the least amount of race laps of any race driver this season.
Is that right?
I counted them when it came up on the screen. Yeah.
I obviously saw the five and then forgot. I forgot he was in the midst of retiring.
Of retiring from a race.
Brilliant. There we go.
Yeah, it's a shame. Not only because I've kind of like got him third favourite to win the championship. No.
Don't think that's going to happen this year, Melissa.
Definitely not. They're going to have to be careful, Red Bull, because they're going to have to keep him sweet and keep him happy and obviously give him a reliable car, because if not, he's going to probably be looking elsewhere, because you can't waste talent like that on something so unreliable. It's gutting. I'm really gutted for him.
But that's another really good point. And again, Mark Webber, absolutely spot on, because he said himself, Max Verstappen's gone from karting to Formula One, basically, without much in between. And we discussed it, I think, in one of the other podcasts about him sounding slightly arrogant trying to get a big drive, because ultimately there aren't any big drivers at the moment other than ahead of Red Bull, so he hasn't got those options. And this needs to be character building, because the guy, it's like he hasn't lived. You know, he really needs to get stuck into a team that's struggling and prove himself, I guess. That's very hard because the car's not proving itself and it's not really down to Max. But I guess so much of it is actually about how he does react.
In terms of on-track ability, he's proven himself already. Character-wise, he's less whiny than Lance Stroll. At least.
Is he though?
I think he is. And if it's starting to crack, well, that's because he hasn't finished 50% of the races, and not all of those have been his fault. Most of them haven't. And he's 18 years old. He's 18 years old on a global stage in a multi-million pound, dollar, euro, whatever, currency, sport.
All the currency.
Multi-million currency sport. And he's got the eyes of the world on him. And he's got the hopes of a nation on him as well. I mean, the amount of orange that was there in the crowds.
Came out in floods to see him.
And his own stand.
Yeah, and you just feel for the guy. You really do. And actually, I have to say, from what I've seen of him, it's understandable to show frustration. If you look at Alonso, Alonso's throwing his toys out of the pram far more than Max is, and yet people are saying about Alonso, well, he's a racer and he can't race, so what do you expect? Of course he's frustrated. Come on now, let's let him off, because it's a real dog of a car. We're not saying that about Max. We're saying, is he whining because he's a kid? No, let him have a rant. Let him go. But your point is exactly spot on, Mike. He's not going anywhere, because there's nowhere to go. What are you going to do? Drive a Williams? No. You're going to go drive a McLaren? Hell no. You're going to go drive a Toro Rosso? That's a demotion.
But Valtteri Bottas has got a 1-year contract and Mercedes might have a seat going.
I like the fact that Max wears his heart on his sleeve, though. He's a bit like Lewis in that sense. He'll say, if he's p***ed off, he'll show that he's p***ed off, and you can't blame anyone. That must take its toll on anyone to not finish 50% of the races, especially when it's not his fault.
I'll just add, Susie Wolf effectively said that Valtteri will be racing for them next year at Mercedes. But we will see. She might not know. Toto might be lying to her. Could happen, especially before she goes on Channel 4. Force India, then. We've done quite well not to mention it until now. What a f***ing mess that is. What is going on there? With two incidents, both where basically Sergio Perez was squeezing Esteban Ocon into the wall. The first one, Sergio kind of admitted, I mean, it's really interesting, I've kind of felt a bit sorry for him actually after the race, but Sergio kind of admitted that he was in the wrong engine mode, so presumably he was distracted and there was another car, wasn't there, in the way, so that kind of, he said was his fault, but I don't quite still know really why that meant. He shoved Esteban into the wall almost. And then the second one, he said, well, that was Esteban's fault because he was going for a gap that wasn't really there. But that's not true, is it? And Esteban said that Sergio basically endangered both their lives.
It's a difficult thing. Firstly, I want to make a point about Ocon. I think actually all of the stuff that's been going on between those two actually says a lot about Ocon in the fact that he's a rookie, yet they're always on track together. Perez has got a lot more experience and has had some really good results in the past.
Don't dress Esteban down there. He's not a rookie. This is his second season in the sport.
Yeah, but compared to Perez, he's dramatically less experienced, and he's always there. Always there. So I think they've got a very well matched pairing. So I think from that point of view, despite all the stuff that's gone on, I think it does show that they're a really well matched pairing. As for the second incident, I'm of the personal opinion that if you are half a car length's length by the side of someone, then that person that you're by the side of needs to give you some respect. If you're 6 inches, as Ocon was, then it's really your responsibility to get out of the way of the car that's in front of you, because you have all the visibility, you can see what's going on. And I kind of see, I'm not saying it's massively Ocon's fault, but I don't think you can lay the blame wholly at Perez's door. You know, if they were side by side and he was forcing him over again, yeah, that's out of order. But there was, you know, Ocon has the visibility to be able to.
But Perez knew he was there. And Perez knows that if he moves over into that gap, he's going to hit him if Ocon doesn't brake.
But Ocon has the ability to see that he is sort of there and within collision distance, whereas there were only about 6 inches past his back wheel. And if you're sat halfway forward in a Formula One car, sat right down with tiny little mirrors, how can you judge that 6 inches? I think Ocon's got responsibility to judge the distance.
Yeah. I don't pretend to know about what cars look like in the mirrors of Formula One cars in the slightest. But you know a car's behind you. Yeah. You know he's going for a gap, but you know he's not close enough. Why squeeze him and risk your back tyre? Because you know 90% of the time when that back tyre makes contact with the front wing, you're going home with a puncture. Full stop.
And he did.
So why are you risking that? Why aren't you actually, as a racer, thinking, do you know what? I'll outbrake the little bastard into the first corner. I'll brake later than him and I'll still make that apex. And then if he's moving onto the racing line in a corner, I have no problem with your argument, DT. You're going into a corner and the gap's not there, put your foot on the brake and back out. But down a straight, being forced into a wall.
It's not straight though. There is a racing line on that bit. That is not a straight bit of road. That is the entrance into Eau Rouge, and you need to have your car 100% placed perfectly for Eau Rouge.
Let's be clear though.
Was it that far down the pit straight? I thought it was much earlier on the pit straight.
It was past first corner.
Okay.
But let's be clear. There are three words that you should add on the end of each one of these sentences you're saying, which is, it's your teammate. And I thought it was interesting there was no penalty given by the race stewards. They just called it a racing incident and forgot about it. But would that have been the same if they hadn't have been teammates?
Yeah, if they weren't teammates, I reckon there would have been a penalty. But I'm kind of a bit sitting on the fence. I don't really know. I'm going to be with the stewards. I probably wouldn't have given anything because it was confusing for me. I don't know who was in the right or the wrong. But you've both given really interesting arguments, don't know.
And I'm not, waved I'm, both I'm, arms in
I,
the air
I,
then.
And I used to distinctly dislike Perez, so for me to kind of argue his corner.
You could argue and actually, I
see exactly where you're coming from, and I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions. But for me, I'm just thinking, if you're the better driver and the car's that far back, why are you squeezing? You all remember when Schumacher squeezed Barrichello right up against the barrier. We lost our minds. We were podcasting back then for that race, weren't we? Yeah. We lost our minds. We thought it was the most irresponsible thing we'd ever seen. I don't see much different. Not much.
The first incident where it was squeezed into the barrier, that is wholly, that's unforgivable. It's that second one where he took his wing off and got the puncture, where I kind of see it more as a racing incident, in the sense that it's a hard one to call, in the sense that, you know, he wasn't squeezing him, he was just taking his racing line. And Ocon was just that little bit too far forward, and I would assume it's ridiculously hard to judge.
So we haven't come to a conclusion on that one then. sorry listeners.
Yeah, we'll let Force India come to a conclusion. That's
I like the fact that Perez, he kept going.
He did.
With his tire off. Yeah.
Three wheels on his wagon.
I hated that.
And then
that.
He retired anyway.
I absolutely hated that. That was the most irresponsible thing he could have done.
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
He almost crashed and he almost cut someone else up at that point.
Yeah,
with three
wheels. He collected a number of other cars.
Yeah. It was like his head had gone.
I don't know whether you're building up to this potentially, but I do just want to say I was watching the Sky coverage and they had Otmar Szafnauer on as their sort of pit wall commentator, and he was remarkably refreshing in his comments. He was very open and basically said, "If they're going to race like children, we're going to start putting team orders in. We're not going to let them race."
Has this not all come down to the fact that there has been a complete lack of leadership over this? Because this strikes me as going all the way back to Baku. I think that was the first incident, but there might have been one before. I'm sure there was some needle before that, and then in Baku, Ocon basically slid. I mean, again, Esteban listed all the issues he'd had with Sergio and failed to mention the fact that he'd slid into him in Baku, which I thought, all right. So, I mean, there just seems to be this aura at Force India of them going, yeah, we'll just let them go. Just go. They'll be all right. Don't worry about it. And basically, that lack of leadership is where they ended up with now.
A good car and everything like that's going to take them so far, but if they can't be mature enough in order to respect it, then, you know, they lost a shitload of points.
The points they've lost this season.
Caused massive loggerheads between the two drivers, which, I mean, is it because they don't know who the number one and the number two is? Do you need to have team orders in that respect? Who is number one? Who is number two? Do you need that?
I think when you're that level and you're not pushing for podiums and you're not pushing for championships, I think the case is your number one driver is whoever's ahead on the track.
I think, didn't someone put in that they could have got on the podium? They were good enough to definitely finish like top six, top seven. But if they don't respect that, then they're going to keep f***ing up, aren't they?
They are. Let's move it on. We'll watch with interest how they deal with it now. I did just want to touch on McLaren, and we mentioned Fernando a moment ago. I mean, Fernando seemed to get the more out of the car. Basically, they said it kaputted in Q3, wasn't it? Because he was going too quick for it. And then in the race, he got up to P7 and then felt wholly embarrassed because he just ended up continually being overtaken, mainly because he got up to P7. So it's almost like he's out driving the car and then it's like, sorry, Fernando, we can't deal with this. You're going to have to get... And that's sort of causing him more pain than whatever.
Well, they retired the car, didn't they? And then apparently there was a report came out that said actually Honda found absolutely nothing wrong with his engine and don't understand why they retired his car because of the engine. It's just like probably because he was grumpy as...
I thought it was his decision to retire it. That's what I initially thought. And I was like, oh no, there was a problem with the car. I was like,
I don't know who could blame him. To be fair, in a way, I think. Yeah. I mean, I must admit, I've over the last few years, I've really, really warmed to Alonso. I think as a fan of Formula One, I not only like the way people drive, but I like their character and the way they conduct themselves.
In I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, sometime soon. I think he'd be good enough.
Will you be watching that, DC?
He's
no.
Good fun, isn't he? He's good fun to have around.
To be fair, he is very, very funny, and he's he does make me smile. But the opening part of Spa with him, I was really enjoying because he was really ringing the. And I thought, God, brilliant. You know, maybe McLaren have got a little bit of something to be hopeful about. And it was just a case that early doors, heavy car,
jumped in the start, very skillful enough to weave his way through, make up some places at the start, maybe the first corner, take advantage, and then
had some good battles as well. Had some really good battles, and then once the race settled into
it, was sticking it to Hülkenberg for a while, wasn't he? Yeah. Them two were going back and forth for ages
until the race sort of settled into its kind of natural state, and then the raw pace was shown, and he just couldn't. You know, his talent wasn't enough to hold off the actual natural pace of the other cars. So, I mean...
I miss him. He needs something good. He needs a good car because he's wasted talent, isn't he?
Oh, massively so, massively so. But I don't think we'll see him in Formula 1 next year, personally.
And on that note, you can follow us on social media. The channels are Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and the handle is @thenrf1. I'm sure you'll be able to find us there. As always, use those social media to tell us all your Formula One thoughts, opinions, get your questions in, anything you want. Or you can email us nrf1podcast@gmail.com. We read them all, and we're going to start getting those included in the podcast as well. So send us your thoughts. The website, of course, for anything you want to find. We've got loads of blogs. We've got... race review from Spa from Callum, and also his ethanol blog is now live. Very interesting reading there, so get those reading. Are the latest prediction league standings, that's actually not factually true, but they're certainly up to date, up to before Hungary. Loads of stuff, betting tips, what have you. nrf1.uk is the website.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Now, we've overrun. It's a great race, so let's rattle through these quickly, shall we? Of the weekends, Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend. Who wants... let's get the nominations in. Go.
Lewis.
Yeah, Lewis.
I'm going to give it to Danny Rick.
That's fine. I had Lewis as well, but that's all good. Team of the weekend. I struggle with this majorly. Any team?
Oh, India.
Yeah, well, they were the team of the weekend, really, weren't they? And not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah.
Renault.
I don't know. I can't remember how they finished at the end. I remember
Hülkenberg had a very good
race.
Yeah.
That'll do. Yeah. Ped.
I'm probably going to say Ferrari purely because they took care of more off-track business than on-track business this weekend.
Fair point, like that.
And they locked up their drivers.
I was going to say Williams for allowing Guy Martin on their pit stops. What a remarkable feat.
That's ridiculous. That's utterly... If he's not been practicing that every day for a year, that's the most ridiculous, dangerous thing they could have done.
It doesn't say much...
Guy Martin. Guy Martin, anything mechanical, he is very, very capable
and
competent.
He's very good.
Don't but care.
It does.
Ridiculous thing to do. It's a gimmick. It's a gimmick. It's like Monaco. It's a gimmick. It doesn't count. It's ridiculous. It shouldn't happen.
Monaco does count, but we're not getting into that. But they did stick him in a yellow helmet so we could all see who he was.
Because it's a gimmick.
It doesn't say much for everyone else. It doesn't say much for the other mechanics, does it really? That they've parachuted someone in probably a day's notice and he's gone and done that. Anyway, Pastor or Goat of the weekend? Ped?
Just goat. I'm probably gonna, Force India.
Force India.
There's not really much better than that, is there? Yeah, Force
what
India.
What do you mean, goat? What
worst? Like Pastor Maldonado of the weekend.
Oh,
who really
f***ed
up? Goat in terms of an animal, not in terms of greatest of all time. Just as in goat of the weekend. I don't know why we came up with goat. Just because it's a poor hapless animal.
So like,
sorry, goat.
Like, you act the goat.
Yeah.
I say Bottas.
Oh,
ouch!
Savage.
I'm gonna agree. Actually.
Oh yeah. Wow! Yeah. Well, I was gonna say I've got Sergio and Ocon, Kimi for his penalty, Daniel Ricciardo for staying up to watch the fight between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather.
But he was up on Aussie time, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but no, it does matter.
On the podium.
No,
we don't care anymore. Go on.
I would like, it's not a goat moment, but I would like to give a special mention to Daniel Ricciardo for actually, I love the guy, I really do. 1,000-watt smile and everything he does, which is amazing. But I think he was a bit of a knob on the podium because he was like getting the crowd to do waves and he was doing like that. And I tell you right now, if you get the opportunity to be on the top step, give that person some respect. Give them the time to talk. I don't care who they are. It's there for a reason. And you could tell it was throwing Weber off as the guy doing interviews. It was throwing the other drivers off. You look like you're not a professional. Okay. So just get your shit together next time.
That's a great call. I agree.
Good shout.
I've changed my coat of the weekend to Lewis.
Oh.
Because he referred to the orange in the crowd as Irish orange.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, poor old Lewis. Oh, well, he can't do everything.
I think he knew what he was doing.
He's got wonderful banter.
Yeah.
Melissa.
Top pads.
Who else? Also going to slag off Julian Palmer for slagging off Fernando Alonso for overtaking him or cutting him up when it was actually Stoffel van Dorn. I'm sorry, Julian. It was Stoffel who was overtaking you, not a two times world
can't
champion.
Slag off Stoffel at his home race where he did absolutely all of note.
Okay. Julian, when you start performing like Nico Hülkenberg, come back to me then.
Yeah, well said, Melissa. Brilliant.
Yeah.
They're well said. Highlights of the weekend.
Lewis.
Yeah, Lewis, yeah.
Martin Brundle back in the commentary box.
Aww.
And
makes a huge difference, genuinely. On track, I believe it was Perez's move where he sort of chicaned between the two cars, but then he overshot the apex and didn't make the corner, which was annoying. There were just some really, really good on-track battles, I think. But yeah, all in all, it was very enjoyable.
We had some three abreast overtaking as well, didn't we? I personally liked Mick Schumacher taking Michael's old Benetton around the track before the race. That was a very touching moment, as was Russ Braun's message from the Schumacher family to Lewis on equaling Michael's pole record. So a couple of nice touches.
I think for me, this is a personal one, it reminded me of earlier on this year and getting to drive Spa, albeit digitally, but in a £3 million driving simulator on, in an LMP1 car.
Where your time's, red? No.
No.
Come back to me when you do them.
I spun it on Eau Rouge twice. And I actually was like, ah!
Yeah, what a simulator that is, by the way.
You properly think you're going to hurt yourself.
Fantastic. I did just want to touch on a couple of things with Danny, Rick. One of the, I think it was Sebastian Vettel's race engineer talking to Seb on the radio. He said, by the way, Seb, Ricciardo is 2 points second, whatever, behind you. I thought, yes, you're Italian. You've pronounced his name right, like we do. Vindication. Sort it out, Danny. Pronounce your name right. I think that was the last point I wanted to make on that. Brilliant.
The important stuff, yeah.
So, rating of the race out of 11, what should we give it? Because it was sort of a slow burner, but, you know, it had intrigue all the way through.
I'm fine at the beginning.
Yeah, I'm,
you did.
I'm,
you
I'm,
said...
Actually, to be fair, I'm with Melissa on that. Solid 7.
Solid 7?
Yeah, for an 8. I like Spa.
For an 8?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably... I don't think it was better than Hungary, personally, so I'd probably give it a 6. So that probably evens out at 7. So there we go. Fair enough, everyone. All right, and who will have had the biggest smile heading home on their private jet plane?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, Lewis.
Yeah.
Can I give us, if we're talking about planes, can I just give a quick shout out to the story I read over the weekend of the McLaren engineer who got all the way from Swindon to Germany on his girlfriend's passport.
Wow.
Hats off to him.
Cute.
Hats off to him.
Hats off to him, or that's a serious national security issue.
What I love about that is the fact that he tried to have everyone believe. He was all indignant when he got pulled aside by German security, going, "It's embarrassing that I've got this far." It's embarrassing, mate. Who doesn't check their passport at the... Like, I check my passport 7 times before I leave the house. Is this mine? Is this mine? Yeah. Is this mine? Laddie mate over here just picks his up, wanders over to the airport and acts all surprised when he gets picked up in Germany for using a false passport. Like he hasn't looked at it the whole journey. What a...
What a story. Right, we are done. Thank you for listening. We've overshot, but, you know, it's, you know, Sergio Perez did it a few times, so we might as well follow his lead. Now, just to let you know, this weekend is the NRF1 Grand Prix at Ella Park. That is Sunday, September the 3rd. If for some reason you're listening to this and in the vicinity, come and watch. I think you're allowed to. I don't know. But it's basically from 2 p.m. I think, roughly. We'll be on track for a few hours. We're going to hopefully film it, get some pictures, do some audio, do some all sorts. So that will hopefully be loads of fun. We'll see who is the quickest driver out of our slot. Although it might not be any of our slot. It might be some of the other people not we invite. The springles are quite tasty. I'm getting the impression.
Oh, I reckon they are. And light as anything. Yeah. Callum looks like a stiff breeze would knock him over. Love you, Callum. Love you.
So I think those two are going to be quite tasty. We will return with our Monza preview and our Monza predictions podcast, which will make it our usual 3 podcasts in 3 days if I get my editing hat on. In the meantime, make sure you keep all over the social feeds and especially nrf1.uk. Until then, it's goodbye from my guests. Goodbye, Ped.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Melissa.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, DT.
Adios.
Goodbye from myself. Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/nrf1. And thanks to Future Radio. This has been the NRF1 podcast. It's our Monza preview next, and we'll be back quicker than it takes 2 Force Indias to become 1. Until then, goodbye.